All right. Thank you for joining the Return to Service podcast. I'm your host, Chris. Today, I'm joined by Rod Caldwell. He's the technical sales director at FlightStar. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you? Good to see you.
I'm good. It was nice to meet you in person at NBAA. I'm glad we could actually do that. So, let's dig into it. I guess just a quick overview. So we did have Bill on the last episode, but if you can, quick overview of FlightStar, and then I want to dive into the new hangar space and explore some of that with you. And then I got some questions about running a sales organization that I want to cover with you. So if we could start there, that'd be great.
Yeah. So FlightStar been around since 1978. Bombardier's been primary focus over the last 10 years or so. I've been with the company 10 years now, almost. Be 10 years in next year. It'll be 10 years. So January 4th. So 10 years. So yeah, it's been a exciting adventure. Always exciting things happening. Do anything from, Challenger 300 maintenance on down to the Lear 45s, Challenger 604s. So it's been good. I've got four sales guys on the team. So just trying to keep the hangars full. We're a fairly small shop. We got five crews that basically handle the inputs. Avionics crew and interior shop. So do everything we can to keep everybody busy for as long as we can.
Okay, nice. And so what are those departments again? I know I talked a little bit about with Bill.
Yep, we have avionics that can do part 23 installs as well as part 25 installs. A lot of Wi-Fi. We have a number of STCs that we have from the Lear 45 side in the ADSB and WAS and SCN, a lot of the software upgrades for the 45 and 75. We also do the interior shop. We can do basically headliners, window lines, carpets, all that kind of stuff in-house. We have a painter that can do end number changes, stripe changes, all that stuff in-house as well. And then a maintenance shop that has, we have four team leads. Consist of about 25 guys, I believe. So, then we have a project manager and general manager that basically run the shop in our QC. So,
okay. So when you've got, from a sales perspective, right? So you're leading the team, you've got four people, and then you have these other teams, right? You have, these team leads, and you have the managers that oversee them, and then you have the different departments. I know this is like a general question, but how do you view that process and communicate among those teams so you're kind of on the same page and sales is able to understand what those teams are dealing with on a day-to-day basis and convey that back to the customer? Like, I know it's a general question, but what's kind of the first thing that comes to mind on that front?
Oh yeah. As soon as my team creates the quote, we reach out to the project manager for scheduling. Hey, Mr. Customer wants to be in on this date. Can we get that date? If we can't get that date, do we need to push or pull on which side, where they need to be and try and find the slot that makes the most sense for our customer. Of course, we try and give them the dates that they're asking for and what they want to do. But we do have a forecasting that we have, we go have the 2025 calendar built and we've got planes booked out, through July next year. So it's kind of one of those things where I'm in direct communication with project manager. She's the one that's ultimately the responsible when the plane arrives and meeting the deadlines and trying to keep the customer informed. So once it leaves the sales hands and the customer is approved the quote and schedule has been set, then it pretty much washes over to the project manager, and then they'll, get with QC and do all the necessary paperwork before arrival. Once arrival's here, then it, goes into the process, and the teams are, we have pretty much the team set up probably 10 to 15 days before the aircraft gets there.
Okay.
And all the work packets are built and all that kind of stuff. So all that stuff is happening behind the scenes so that it's a smooth transition. Some customers will stop and stay with us. Some customers will, hey, I'm leaving. Here's the times and cycles. Call me once you have information about what's going on with the airplane,
Interesting. Okay. So, what's that like, the balance between those different customer personalities. And
it is definitely a balance. Yeah. Each one's their own entity, for sure. Some are totally hands-on, and want to be known about everything. I would say 50 to 75% probably all want to be communicated with, but don't need to know everything. They mm-hmm. just want to know, hey, where's my change order? What's it going on? You know, some of them like to be communicated to, you know, every day. Others like, hey, give me an update once a week. Give me it up on Friday or give me it up on Monday. You know, whatever it takes, you know, stay on schedule as best you can and go from there. So we usually just got to have that in the transition meeting or in the sales side. You know, we'll go, hey, how often do you want to be communicated with, or what's your expectations when you come to FlightStar? You know, do you want to be talked to twice a day, once a day, every other day? You know, so it's really, it's built to appease them.
Got it. And do you guys, I know you said you have stuff booked out until, July, which is pretty awesome to have that kind of pipeline and things booked. But so do you, and feel free to answer this however you want, but do you guys kind of build some slack into those timelines to be able to handle, you know, hey, we found additional discrepancies, or hey, this person, yes, they said they could do May, but actually we got to do this in March. Like, how do you guys kind of view that planning and preparation?
We usually have a little bit of leeway in the schedule. We don't pack it full to 100% in any way, shape, or form. We usually, and most of the customers, when you're planning for July, you know, they may have an uptick in flying and have to come in early. It's usually pretty flexible on that side. We don't try and get the schedule to where it's, you know, at full capacity just for that sheer reason. We try and make sure that we can, especially the friends and family, we call them our friends and family because we know them. I know these people. I've known these people for years. You know, we've actually, it's more than just a place to bring their airplane. We're friends, we're family, you know, it's just kind of, that's the atmosphere we've grown here and continue to build on. And that's really what we strive for is you're not just a number here. You're here for, you're part of us.
Well, I got that. I definitely got that sense from Bill, and it was cool to talk through his philosophy on how he views all this. And I mean, after doing it for 47 years straight, it's like, oh my God, it's almost like a miracle that he could still do it and have that same philosophy. From the sales side, how do you do that from like a leadership perspective of like maintaining those kind of relationships with customers? And then how do you instill that in the rest of the team?
I have a really good team that's with me. We've done a really good job of all staying focused and heading in, you know, new directions and changing on the fly. And that's proof. I mean, proof right now is, you know, that's why we're getting into so much more Challenger work, the Challenger 604s, Challenger 605s, the Challenger 300s. We're growing as a company, and we got to grow in the airplanes too. You know, we got to get more diversity, you know. We've been the Lear 4575 gurus for a long time, and we've been slowly over the last 4 or 5 years, we've started to been weeding in the Challengers and doing more of the heavy inspections on the Challengers. And that's the hardcore focus we're doing now is, you know, we're focusing on those wider bodies because we have a double the size platform that we're going to have available come the first of the year. So we're going to have another hangar that's the same size as our current hangar. So we'll have plenty of space for the Challenger 604, 605, 300s, 350s, nice. 3500s that we can maintain and do the heavy inspections on them as well.
And so what's the difference from a sales perspective, right? Like, what is the difference between dealing with Lears and with Challengers? Like, why is that you mentioned it as like, I've got a good team and they're growing. What's the difference that you've noticed in the quoting and the dealing with customers and things like that between those two platforms?
Well, it's actually been a really cool transition because a lot of our 4575 operators are moving up into those airplanes.
Nice.
And enjoy working with us. That's made it easy for us to get in and do the heavier inspections and that kind of stuff for them. You know, some of those people, you know, a lot of these customers are Bombardier products. So that could be, you know, one of them might have a Lear 45 and a Global, or mm-hmm. a Challenger 3500 and a Challenger 604. You know, so that Bombardier family is where what we're really good at. You know, so we like those airplanes. They're nice airplanes. They're fun to work on. Everybody seems to like them. And that was just a growth. And it probably started 3 or 4 years ago when one of our, you know, a couple of our Lear 45 operators actually bought Challengers and wanted to stay with us because they knew us. They'd been with us for 5, 6, 7 years, you know, and just like the way we do business. You know, it's still similar to a handshake. Yes, as a sales team, we ask for a signed quote. Make sure the work scope is what, you know, what you're expecting, what we're expecting, the downtime's what you're expecting and what we're expecting, you know. But again, we don't compete with the bigger shops. We're not always the fastest because we are so much smaller, you know, mm-hmm. and that's something some customers just can't have that. Some customers fly the airplane enough to where it makes sense for them to, it makes sense for them to go elsewhere. You know, we're, you know, what they might do in 8 days, we'll do in 12 days, you know, and that's just, sometimes that's not possible, you know, sometimes yeah. it's downtime.
Yeah. Well, it's, you bring up a good point because I think a lot of the main frustrations that people are having, at least from what I've talked to with operators, is like the, how would you put it? It's not always transparency is not the right word in it, but it's like a false expectation of this can be done. And then, it seems like there's a fence between sales and the, you know, the maintenance team yeah. in a lot of places. So it's just like, hey, this is sold. Let me throw it over the fence and then good luck, guys. And they're just like, oh my God, this is impossible. We can't, yeah. we can't what do happens? This. So you can close a deal, but that it still might be a 12-day turnaround, and now it's just everybody's really pissed off. So it seems like a better way to approach it of being like, hey, look, this is going to be those 12 days. But another interesting thing you said was that it seemed to grow out of the current customers. Is that a fair, like the growth into these bigger platforms that came from current customers? Is that like a majority of them or?
No, it's not a majority of them, but it is a handful. I mean, we do have a handful that still operate both sides. They operate the Challenger class and the Lear 45 class, you know, so it's those that, and we just continue to get more and more of those from word of mouth. I mean, it's really more so than anything right now. It's been word of mouth and, hey, we have really good luck here, you know, and that's the thing about most companies that I've been with in the past. The silos are there. Here it's, you know, every week we have a conference call with the production and say, hey, give me the good, bad, and the ugly. You know, hey, this one went bad. This is why it went bad. You know, okay, how's the customer feel? I've talked to the customer, you know, and a lot of times they'll call me too, you know, and that'll be good, bad, or ugly, you know, and that's what I expect. I want to know the good, bad, and the ugly. You know, I want to know that you had a good experience. I want to know that here's what happened that made it a bad experience. And did it all fix itself in the end or did it not? You know, so that's the nice thing about being here is I get that. You know, a lot of times when I was sales elsewhere, once you sold it, you didn't know anything. You didn't know anything, you know, and that's not the way we like to operate here. We like to be all on the same page. And granted, it may be a day later that I'm on the same page, but I'm typically always on the same page with what's going on.
Yeah, so. It's a better way. That's why I like being at the company that I'm at right now is because we have this pretty consistent communication back and forth between sales and then the team that's supporting it, and then it's software, so you have that other aspect of like building it and getting those feedback loops. But a lot of times. As weird as this will sound, is some of the best innovations and enhancements we make come from situations when customers are pissed.
Oh yeah,
and it's like I'm extremely unhappy. I'm super frustrated, and it's a lot of times it's that. Okay, all right, I hear you. What are you running into? Give me the rundown. Wow, that does sound like it sucks.
Yeah,
You're dealing with that. Let's work towards actually getting you a solution. And sometimes, like you said, a decent amount of times it works itself out. But I found that I always learn something from those situations that fortunately with the size of our team, I can bring it back to almost everybody all at once within that same few days or that same week. And you can see those changes happen and evolve. And it does allow you to take on newer, bigger things, which is cool. And it sounds like you guys have that phenomenon, if you will, is kind of happening within FlightStar now, it sounds like.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, okay. We've definitely, and we're trying to grow. I mean, we're trying to gain more manpower. Manpower is a hard thing right now to find, and just trying to do it, adapt and being able to meet the customer's expectations is always number one goal. You know, it's always the number one focus is making sure that they're happy and enjoy their visit and want to come back, you know?
Yeah. So. Well, and so, all right, that's a nice segue into the new hangar. So as you guys grow and things like that, so what's the, I kind of want to dive into a few aspects of the hangar. So I guess from like a business opportunity, kind of why you guys are doing it. And then is there anything specific about how this was built? I know you mentioned it can now house like the Challengers and the larger platforms. Is it like a different size or, you know? I don't know what the right question to ask is, but
no, absolutely. Yeah, no, it was actually an existing hangar. It was a storage hangar for us. It was able to house, you know, a Global 7500 and multiple other airplanes.
Oh, wow.
And we're just building a bigger garage down further down the airport to allow us to bring in and maintain a different size. Well, it doesn't have to be a different size. If we fill them both up with Lear 45s and Lear 75s, it's just additional space for us to be able to break out. And we've designated that as the wide body. So the Challenger 300, 604, 605, 3500s, we can fit four of them in there at once. So there is the growth opportunity. So, we can, you know, not that we're going to get that. I don't know that we'll get that big in the foreseeable future probably, but that would be the ultimate hope, I guess, you know, if we could find the manpower to do it, but we have that additional landscape to be able to provide that service, which we feel is a everyday growing. I mean, the planes are still being created. They're still being made. They're still coming off the line. There's always going to be a need for that type of inspections on those size airplanes. So,
yeah, it's setting yourself up for the future. That's cool.
Yes, exactly right.
And so I guess why now?
Well, we've always wanted to grow. I think it's just growing at the right time. I think a lot of it had to do with the airplanes that are, you know, Bill G and Rusty both, you know, had our current existing clientele that is a separate business from what we do. So we have, you know, we look for outside customers to bring their airplanes to us. We have another part of our organization that does our fleet. And we have its own maintenance crew. We have everybody, which is broke apart so that if our airplanes come back broke, our maintenance team for our fleet handle that.
Got it.
You know, and as we were growing over the years, we learned the hard way is the fact that, you know, Chris, you brought me your airplane, but one of our airplanes came back broken. I can't work on yours because I got to fix ours. Well, that didn't go over very well. So we changed that about 8 years ago, probably. So once we changed that, I think that that made it a lot more ability to grow and build the shop the way we wanted it to from the outside customer side. And that's kind of what we're doing here is just it's taken us that long to get the growth in the campus to allow us to do, you know, this has been a 5-year goal of ours. You know, it's going to come to fruition, you know, the middle to end of January.
That's awesome.
So we're finally here and now it's me and my team's job to fill it,
you know,
and get the airplanes coming. So it's going to be exciting times. You know, next 18 months are going to be a huge push, finding the customers, finding the avenues and the goods in all of it and what we really want to truly work on. There's a couple other different paths that we've talked about and discussed, but right now, we're going to continue down the Challenger path and do some avionics upgrades in the Challenger 604s. We're going to do the Wi-Fis and some of that kind of stuff. But some of the heavier inspections on the Challengers is the core focus right now, with a little bit other possibilities in the near future.
Got it. And so, I guess between those two platforms, is the equipment needed to support them, is it fairly along the same lines, or is it a complete separate set of equipment to support it?
It's a completely different set of equipment, but we've had a number of the Challenger line within our family for so long that we have all the tooling, most of the tooling needed for all of these, you know, heavier inspections that we're planning to do and create. With our NDT level 3, that really helps us too for the X-rays. You know, we can do all of that in-house. We don't have to bring somebody in like we have in the past. You know, we have all those capabilities in-house to do those heavy inspections. Ultimately, the only thing that we don't have right now is the exterior paint. We can do the striping, we can do the paint touch-ups, but that's a whole nother endeavor that has been a topic of discussion. I don't know that that's in our near future wheelhouse, but it has been a topic of discussion over the years.
Wow. Okay. So you guys can do, I'll call it a D check. You know, I forget what their maintenance program is on, whether it's monthly or, but okay. So you guys can do that full range.
9,600 hour on the 45s, 96 month, 48 month inspections on the Challengers are not an issue for us.
Wow.
So that's awesome. The big inspections are pretty cool. So.
Yeah, that's very cool because when I was at Flight Docs, it was that was always kind of that point where these customers would bring those aircraft out, whether it was a Part 91, you know, corporate flight department, or even a charter. Even if that, you know, at a certain point, a lot of these guys were just like, "Hey, we can't do. We stop at the B. The B is the highest that we can do." And even sometimes, you know, and if we have enough discrepancies, it's like, "All right, can't do the B."
Right.
You got to send it out.
Well, and typically on the 96 month, that's really the hard part for the Challenger 300 and those models, is the plane comes apart so far that most people will want to do the paint also. And that's really where we kind of, you know, the plane comes apart so far and so much comes apart off of it that painting it sometimes makes the most sense, which is why the paint booth has been a topic of discussion for us in the future to be able to help with that.
I see. Okay. So let's take a 96 month inspection, right? It's a pretty big deal, pretty high dollar amount, pretty long-term project. How do you walk a customer through what that's going to entail? What's your kind of process around that?
Well, fortunately, I don't deal with the project management side, I guess. So the day-to-days are pretty much all what the team lead and the project manager in direct communication with, you know, hey, here's the breakdown of this is the process that we go through. And they basically just check boxes, you know, they run through it and communicate with the customer. Hey, we're this far along in the 96 month, you know, here's the discrepancies we found. We're going over to this part of the airplane next, you know, so that's really, I get the high level view of the day-to-days in that aspect. So I can definitely get you the answers, but as the day-to-days and how that's operating, I hear about it from our morning calls, but I'm not seeing that transition.
Well, even from a sales perspective, right? Even before that, when you're communicating to that customer, just curious, like when somebody comes to you and they need that inspection done, what's that conversation like? What are some of the concerns that they typically have? What do they want to know? My question is really like, why do they end up going with you guys after those conversations to be able to do such a big project? Because that's a lot of trust. That's a lot of...
That's the main word, trust.
Yeah.
It's trust in us making sure they're aware that we're capable of doing this, because if we're not capable of doing it, I would never sell it to you. And that's the way me and the sales team are. If we're not going to set you up for failure, because it's just going to make us look bad in the end. You know, I would never sell you something that I wasn't confident that we could do, you know, just as good, if not better than anybody else out there in the industry. That's the one thing that we will never do.
Yeah. And so what are they concerned about when they come to you? Like, what are some of the main, the kind
of, most of it's corrosion, inlet corrosion on the 96 month. There's a lot of spots for corrosion, that can be there. And that's really, you know, a lot of it comes back to how it's been maintained, who's been maintaining it, how much they're flying it, Where are they flying it?
Yeah, the environment. You
know, some of the environment's a big deal with corrosion. I mean, it's trying to, you know, you hope that you don't find any of that, but they're well aware of it. They're well aware of the bad areas and what concerns they have from all the conversations they have. Because you're right, it's a big investment, you know. And do we, you know, some of the conversations I have is, do we sell the airplane before we get there, you know, or do we, you know, go through with it and then it's a reset airplane, you know, mm-hmm. you basically are starting over again, you know, because that 9,600 hour or 96 month or, you know, is a huge, it's a huge undertaking and it is a true investment, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting. What is that conversation like, kind of navigating people through the, do we sell it? Do we do the maintenance and then sell it? Do we do the maintenance and keep it? What's that like?
Well, the ones that we have done have been, they're going to keep it. You know, nice. Others have been, hey, we're going to buy it and then we'll decide if we want to sell it, or we'll do it and then decide if we want to sell it after, you know. But I'm right now, there's four or five customers that are approaching the 9,600 hour on the 45s that are in that same boat. So I'm actually breaking down the parts and testing the open market to see, hey, what are these engines worth? What's this landing gear worth, you know, and trying to give them, you know, an idea of, hey, this is how much we think we can get for the engines. This is how much we think we can get for the landing gear. Now you've got to decide on what you want to sell the airplane for and what makes sense, you know? So, but I have done some of those breakdowns for a number of clients, you know, trying to give them the best educated guess. You know, so if you're going to come in and the engines are, you know, 500,000 and the gear is 250,000, well, you're 750,000, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to take time to get rid of the rest of it, but if you got that time, then you might make your money back. If you're, you know, I got to put it in their court. I can't tell them that this is what I would do. You know, I don't own an airplane, you know, so I can't begin to tell them how to spend their money. I can just give them all the facts and try and give them the best educated guess that I can give and let them go with it from there.
Well, I mean, I think that's probably the best that you can. That's probably the best way to go about it, because there's so many of these factors, right? And then to your point, it's, you know, somebody plans out when they're going to sell it or do that maintenance, and then you've got an uptick. For whatever reason, travel reasons, a bunch of extra board meetings, whatever it ends up being. But if you can have that data in front of you to know what the costs are and weigh it out. It really, all it is I think the best you can do is take an educated guess.
Yep.
You could probably science the hell out of it if you wanted to, but it might be more of an investment than it's worth. But I mean,
well, and you just try and not to, you try and get them stuff as fast as they want, because when the owners and operators ask those questions, they're asking for specific reasons, because it's like, do I want it? So you're trying to do it as fast as you can and get them an educated guess, you know, before they, you know, decide to move on down the pasture. So.
Yeah, 100%. Well, this was awesome talking through this. I'm glad I got to learn about these nuances on this side, but I guess before we wrap up, is there anything else that we should touch on?
I don't think so. I think we're just excited that we're growing. I think that being a part of Flight Star has been an honor for me, and I enjoy the company. I enjoy the people here in it. It's a lot better than a number of the places that I've been in my past. That I found a good home and I enjoy it, and we're looking forward to what 2025 and beyond is going to bring us.
Do you feel like being in this kind of environment, like I got a flavor of Bill's leadership style.
Yeah.
Just curious from your perspective of being a leader within that environment. What does that do for you? Does it like unlock something in you, or do you know what I'm saying?
It makes me comfortable with bringing up ideas and not just saying, no, this is the way we do things. That's not how it is here. It's, hey, let's talk about this and go, this, and this could be a good thing, but this, and this could be a bad thing. You know, it's one of those things where it's an open door policy. Hey, I've got this idea. This is what we want to do. You know, we need to send people to school. And that's really where we're at right now, is sending guys to school. You know, all of our technicians are Bombardier trained. It's a matter of getting them to the right schools and the right, you know, and the right timing of that. And it really is. It's been a sigh of relief from some of the places I have worked in my past that allow you to suggest something. And maybe it doesn't go, and maybe it just gets tabled for, you know, 6 or 8 months. And then we go, hey, let's revisit this, because we're at this point in our growth, mm-hmm. you know, and 90% of it right now is going to be the growth of the manpower. You know, that's really where the technicians and everybody's seeing it, I think. And it's just finding the right place to come work for us has been the biggest trick. You know, luckily we have a great team that we're building on right now, and just looking for more key players to fall into place and allow us to grow.
That's cool. It's based on what we've been talking about, it almost sounds like in that environment, it like fosters a sense of honesty, or you can be honest without being penalized for it. But then it converts like the role of sales from just, I need to sell, to like, okay, can we be the eyes of the organization for the future and what we're seeing out in the market? And yeah, people have an appetite for this, or guys, that's a great idea, but nobody has an appetite for that. We're going to spend,
yes, sir,
you know,
right. Yeah.
It's interesting how that kind of environment facilitates that type of change, where you can be forward thinking and come up with these ideas, but not be so. I feel like the other way, when it's very much you're in your own lane and just stick to your lane type thing, it actually breeds like a weird selfishness. It's probably not the right word, but a CYA. Yep. A mindset of CYA kind of goes throughout the entire organization. I've seen that quite a bit. So
there's a lot of that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's cool to see the alternative path.
Yep. Yeah, we have a meeting weekly that Bill and Rusty are a part of, and it's spitballing at times. It's talking about, you know, of course, the financials, all that kind of stuff. But we talk about it on a, you know, weekly, monthly basis. That allows us to go, hey, what about this? Or, hey, we definitely need some of this new tooling to do this next upcoming inspection, or, you know, something to that degree. So there's a group of about 10 of us that convene every week. And some weeks it goes a couple hours, and other weeks it goes 20 minutes. You know, it just depends on what the topic of discussion is, but they let us talk. They hear us. And yeah, there's a notepad where the back pages are all the, in the future, and then the front pages are like, here's my bullet points that I got to deal with right now. So
that's awesome.
It is a very good environment, and I've certainly enjoyed it here. So
cool. And Rod, where can people get in touch with you?
rcaldwell@flightstar.com. And on the website, you can roll through the website and see all of our capabilities. It's www.flightstar.com. And any quote requests or anything like that can come through the website as well, or my email. So
nice.
Phone number 309-737-3382 is my direct cell phone. So anybody that has any questions, or happy to talk to anyone.
Awesome. Well, thanks for doing this, Rod. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it, Chris. Thank you much.
All right. Thanks, everybody.